Hey Abner, what do you think of Android 15 so far?
Not much. That said, it's kind of more stable than I would expect it to be. I know it's the first beta, and beta is when everybody jumps on, but right now, the main deal breaker as a daily driver would basically be that NFC doesn't work and Google Wallet doesn't work. But other than that, it feels a lot like the Android 14, where Google is probably waiting for I/O next month to show off the major user experience and visual tentpoles. But yeah, it's the beta continues. Android 15 continues.
I'm guessing, like me, you're running this on a Pixel 8, right? Just a regular Pixel 8?
I am Pixel 7,
actually. Oh, okay. So you're going back a few, technically two versions of device, right? Is it three, if you include Pixel Fold? I'm interested to see what Google does with Android 15 wholesale, because in terms of the developer preview, it almost feels like a continuation of the QPR betas. And that's...
I can see that. You know, that is the sentiment.
That feels... I'm guessing from anybody out there who's listening is probably thinking it's no different. It's Android 14.5 as opposed to Android 15.0. And I don't know. I think that probably gives us an indication of how mature Android has become since Android 12, maybe? I don't know. I would love to hear what you think about it.
Yeah, because at the fundamental level... what everybody is expecting / wanting is more generative AI features. But at a fundamental level, it compared to the iOS model, where iOS 18 is expected to be a big AI update, all those AI updates happen on the app level. The Google app, Gemini, the workspace apps, it's just a different model. And I'm not sure what Gen AI looks like in the context of a core OS, the core UI. Like on Chrome, for example, it's something like organizing your tabs. I'm not sure I see a clear equivalent on a mobile OS just yet.
I'm fascinated to see what Google does with the generative AI in the terms of, we have this whole material U and emphasis on the U aspect of it. I'm fascinated to see if Google goes down the route of, we're going to put more generative AI functions, easy for me to say, into the device so that we can effectively make that material U more U. So I literally do not know how that would almost visually appear on an Android phone, but I would be fascinated to see how Google does that in terms of bringing these functionalities across and letting AI almost create the UI that suits you best. I'm fascinated to see how it does it.
Yeah, but these adaptive layouts is something that I feel was explored earlier on by people here and there. But you're right. It's right now, everything is the same. Everybody has the same core home screen layout. I guess the furthest we've gotten is the idea of the Pixel Launcher dock. I'm sure there's a name for it that escapes me. But the dock, you allowing Android to place different icons throughout the day that update different apps that are useful. Have you ever used that seriously?
To be honest with you, I would love to say yes, but I'm going to say no. Because my dock has not changed for probably 5 years. Let me reel it off for you right now. Let me unlock my Pixel 8. So I have the four. It's four at the bottom dock, right? I can't even remember, but I know that I have.
I have five.
You have five. I've seen your screenshots. I keep it to four. So I have.
I'm not low-key judge, but I kind of low-key judge four dock people.
I'm happy with the four layout. I think I maybe set up the Pixel 7 series and kept it at 4 and kind of worked, kind of lived with it. I have the dialer, which I don't make phone calls, so I don't know why that's there. I have pocket casts, because you got to have your podcasts every single screen you're on. I have Chrome and I have WhatsApp. So for me, maybe that fifth icon that changes throughout the day might come in handy. And do you know what? I'm going to do that right now. I'm going to make that change right now.
Hey.
And then I'm going to see how I get on with it over the next couple of weeks. And I will give the listeners an update. It may have gone painfully and I've switched back to that four doc layout, but I'm genuinely intrigued to see how, if that's the first level of AI integration and giving you suggestions, where could we go from there? Where could we see Google almost using that AI prowess and that decade or decades of developing these technologies and using LLMs? It doesn't seem to me like there is a clear route to do so. And I know you mentioned iOS 18. iOS 18 feels like it's going to be a huge generational leap for iPhone because
everybody says it.
Yeah, like it would be funny if it isn't. I would laugh so much if it isn't. But I feel like maybe the fact that iOS has stayed so consistently the same, if that makes sense, as you could go back to iOS 3.1 and iOS 3.1 and iOS 15, 16, 17. There is a really, really big shared lineage there. But if you did the same with Android, early versions of Android, Cupcake, and then go to Android 12 and beyond, it doesn't even feel like the same operating system. So maybe we're spoiled for choice. Maybe Google went above and beyond when the Android 12 was released, and we've just kind of been spoiled that every single year there were so many UI changes. And I don't know. I'm fascinated to see what happens with it. But as far as Android 15 goes, I can't say I'm not disappointed. I'm a little bit disappointed that we haven't seen much. I'm kind of in your camp where I think that IO is probably going to be where things change, but I'm hoping that Google messes around with the media player again, because they love doing that every single year. it's not an Android release without Google messing around with the media player. So if anybody from Google is out listening, please mess around with the media player, because I love seeing what you do with it.
I'd love if it stayed the same. Well, it could be more compact is my thing, I guess. And there was, I'm not sure if it was a bug or it was an intentional design, but when the media player was in quick settings, that was an interesting bit. I don't know, compactness, but otherwise I like the design we have, I guess, is my two bits about it.
Yeah, I think probably it's a shame that we can't sit here and talk about Android 15 for hours, because it is basically so minute the amount of changes. But I guess we're just going to have to sit on our hands and wait and see what happens at I/O. Maybe there'll be some cool stuff that comes out of it. But I'm loving the fact.
And speaking of that,
yeah, sure.
I guess this is more an OS level addition, but widgets. You had a good deep dive into the current state of Google widgets a few weeks ago, and how. I know you put a lot of new widgets on your home screen for it, but have any stuck?
Do you know what? It's a really good question, because as I've changed my layout on my home screen, a lot of the new widgets that I've been using have appeared all of a sudden. I have been using the Maps widget. I really like that one.
Me too. It's a nice. It's pretty nice to just see where you are and what's around you, and to get traffic to a smaller degree.
Yeah, I mean, I love the option to search for coffee shops nearby, because I'm trying to find high quality coffee shops in my area where I live in the UK, in Leeds, and without going into the city centre, you have to go to like the smaller kind of the suburbs areas, and finding a good coffee shop's actually more difficult than I've anticipated. So I've been using that quite a bit when I'm driving around. I've kept the YouTube music.
The circular one.
I really like that one. And I mean, I need to resize these. I'm literally looking at them and getting PTSD from looking at the way the 5x5 docs destroyed my home screen. But the Google Keep widget is really good, because I use that for like shopping lists, reminders and things. And I've really enjoyed using that. The only other one that I've kept that I didn't already have is the Conversations widget, which is quite old. But I've been using that for you guys specifically contacted him on Slack. So there's like one for you, there's one for Jordan, there's a one for the other guys on the team, and like some of our group chats. But I'm using them, but I'm not probably using them as effective as I probably could. I'm very much a default home screen kind of guy. I kind of like the at-a-glance widget because I have a Nest doorbell, so I get the little pop-up if someone comes to the door, and I kind of like it like that. And there's a small Google clock, but widgets are such a strange thing because I guess you find what you like and you don't really change.
No, do you think there's enough utility there with the widgets you have, or do you want? So iOS widgets are increasingly pretty interactive, and it's at least on par with Android, but the Android widget system, it's this. Well, I guess the big difference is iOS locks you into certain styles and templates. Like, all the music widgets are basically the same on iOS. Mm-hmm. On Android, it's a bit of a more Wild West. But the utility, there are not a lot of buttons on widgets, if that makes sense, on Android. It's more showing information rather than interacting, which is fine. Scrolling a list, a calendar, your task list is fine, but I don't know. I think there needs to be, we need to be to interact and save us from having to actually open the app to make widgets more functional.
Yeah, I think maybe that's why I have such an over-reliance on the dock, maybe. I've noticed, I'm aware that Pocket Cast has just released some redesigned widgets. I'm so pleased for that because I use the Pocket Casts widget on iOS.
Yeah, now playing
so much, yeah. So much that it's nice to have the actual the play queue there.
The app next queue. Yeah,
yeah. I'm still waiting on that to arrive, but I love the idea that I can have that on my home screen, and I don't know, I wouldn't have it on the main page, but I'd have it on like a side page, and I can scroll through and just hit play, and can maybe, because what I tend to do is play things on my Nest Hub. But yeah, I'm hoping that you've probably given me a bit of a wish list for Android 15 in terms of like, maybe we should have more widgets that are definitely interactive. And I'm guessing you could have generative aspects of it would be kind of cool. So, so it's context aware. So even the default widgets are context aware. So yeah, but overall, I think it kind of summarizes how little there is in Android 15 so far that we're talking about widgets that are technically not related to the system. So I'm aware, as someone who doesn't use Google Wallet all that often, but Google Wallet seems to have more changes in the last couple of weeks than Android 15's had since the developer preview one. Is that correct?
So yeah, it's kind of funny. Google Wallet they haven't had like a formal announcement about new features and changes, but there's been little drops leading up to the past month, really, about all these changes to the experience. So let's start with something simple. You can now long press the wallet icon and see app shortcuts of your saved payment methods, which you can drag onto your home screen. This feature existed before, now it's back, it's faster. But the bigger change is basically Google wants you to re-authenticate more. So let's say you unlock your device, and then 3 minutes later you want to do a tap to pay transaction. After 3 minutes from that initial unlock, you will have to re-authenticate again, because Google has drastically shortened down the unlock period, basically.
Do you know what the reason for that is?
No, it's besides more, we can assume it's more security. It's taking a more stringent posture. For comparison, Apple Wallet makes you unlock on every single payment before every single payment with Face ID or Touch ID. And it's interesting people's reaction to this change.
I mean, I'm fascinated because I must admit, I don't use Google Wallet as much as I probably should. And I think you touched on it there, that because I've recently started dual wielding, that's an incredibly strange phrase to say, dual wielding the iPhone 15 Pro Max and the Pixel 8 Pro, I find that I'm switching between the two payment platforms so regularly that one does naturally come out on top. And I have to say, from my experiences, the older version of Wallet definitely feels like it's way behind how Apple does things. I think that the interface is nice. I actually quite like the double tap of the power button now. I think I've become accustomed to it. But yeah, I think I would like to see Wallet go through more changes, and kind of trying to get feature parity with Apple is not a bad thing in this regard, because they probably are the market leader in terms of phone wireless payments, right?
Yeah, the design, you just bring up an interesting point. Like, so Google Wallet has that card carousel at the top. You left to right. Well, Apple shows you, you can get a preview of all your cards in one go, in one list at the top of the app. It's, I'm not sure how many cards people switch to, so maybe it's maybe not that big of an issue. I just have one main one, basically. So, but for some people who wield a lot of cards, I can see how it's annoying to switch in Google Wallet.
Yeah, I'm between three, so I'm kind of, I don't mind threes probably, but I reckon that probably is the maximum. I think any more than that, it starts to get a bit stressful. I'm intrigued to see how the re-authentication process actually, if people like it or dislike it, I'm not that bothered.
Yeah, it's so, like, the use case I come across is I'm at the supermarket, get in line, unlock my phone, play around until I get to the register. Usually, my phone is still unlocked, and then when I go to tap to pay, I just can tap my phone. Now, I need to either open the Google Wallet app, enter my fingerprint, or just lock the entire device again, and then unlock at for the tap to pay transaction.
That sounds ridiculous, doesn't it? That sounds like friction, but if I'm being completely honest, that's exactly how I've done it with Apple Wallet. So it, like I just said about a couple of minutes ago about feature parity, that feels like it may be more in line with what Apple are doing things, rightly or wrongly. But yeah, I can understand why people would consider that friction. I find it really frustrating sometimes when, like you say, you're waiting in line or you're waiting in queue or whatever it happens to be, and you've unlocked your phone, you're prepared and ready to pay, and then all of a sudden, you try to put it to the reader, and then it's like, oh, you need to put your passcode in or show your face. And you have to do like that weird, awkward shuffle where you like kind of look at the payment reader, kind of hold it in a weird position. It's kind of funny, but I imagine that's going to be way more commonplace on Android now.
Yeah, it's... Look, the question is, should Google just move to the Apple Pay model where you unlock for every transaction? Is that easier than this changed behavior of people like being mad that why isn't their phone working? Is it okay from a security standpoint? It's safer to just every single time you want to pay, you unlock.
I think the problem is the learned behavior aspect of it, isn't it? So we've learned that on Android you don't necessarily have to do that every time, and then changing that part of the process during a transaction is going to cause that friction, as you mentioned. But at the same time, I completely understand from what Google are trying to do from security. So I'm so on the fence on this that I apologize. I can't give you a direct answer unless it's a rhetorical question, in which case, what is going to happen? I'm very fascinated to see what happens.
Yeah, it's clear that Google has landed that they want to retain the old behavior of like, once you unlock your phone, you can still go to pay. You don't have, there's a gap, but they shortened it to this 3 minutes in the name of security, really. And I'm not saying that more security isn't better. I'm absolutely not arguing that, but the balance, I think it would have been better if they just did every single to ingrain that behavior of Apple's double tap to pay. That just seems smoother.
Yeah,
as a transition.
When you lay it out like that, I think that does make more sense. I mean, I'm fascinated as well because I'm reading that you'll have to change verification settings for transit options as well, so you don't have to verify for transit. Is that correct? Or am I
They're formalizing that, and I think that's also a good move. So if you have like a dedicated transit card, what is it in the UK? Oyster?
Oyster on the tube, yeah. So sadly, I don't live in London, so I don't really use Oyster often. But I just use my card. Luckily, this is a complete segue. I'm sorry for derailing you here, but anyone who comes to the UK will know now that on the Underground, you don't actually need to use an Oyster card anymore. You can actually just use a debit credit card on Tap to Pay, and then you tap out at the next destination and it'll charge you whatever it is. Otherwise, if you don't do that, it'll just charge you the full day rate for travel. So you don't actually need an Oyster card anymore, which is a shame because I quite like them. Sorry.
No, totally. No, so yeah, the transit is you have the option, you have the option to add the verification when you're unlocking, when you're paying with your credit or debit card in dedicated transit scenarios. So that's that change. Another interesting thing that's happening is in some European countries, not the UK, every single transaction now requires, no matter the amount, no matter if it's only a euro, you have to unlock, you have to verify. Previously, you could just tap to pay while your device was still locked. The payment limits are basically gone. They're no longer, Google's no longer listing them.
Huh. See, that would, I feel like if they just did that for everyone, it would negate any issues or like friction, like you mentioned, because at least you know I've got to unlock. So
yeah,
what is that, an EU directive, or is that just Google's doing it, maybe doing it thinking that the EU will get step in at some point?
I think it is mostly if, like in the UK, in the US, some other countries, you always have to unlock to pay no matter the amount. So it's just bringing those countries in line. It's like some people's complaint is that they want Google Wallet to work exactly like their credit card.
Okay, that makes sense. Yeah, I can see that. That's sensible. That's a sensible.
It would be sensible, but in this new security push, I guess we can call it that, everything has to unlock, which again brings back to what we were saying about, should you just make switch every time you want to pay, you have to unlock, you have to authenticate, and is that just easier to get everybody on the same page?
I'm now really interested to see what is your percentage of using your phone versus using the physical card. Do you even carry a physical card anymore?
Never. I never carry a physical card anymore.
I kind of I'm in that boat, but I think I've mentioned it in a previous podcast. I'm so worried that it will fail. So I constantly will have a backup on me just to be on the very safe side.
I fortunately haven't had anything entirely fail yet. But speaking of wallets, I'm really waiting. I really want my ID on a virtual ID, a digital ID. I'm not sure what the state in the rest of the world is, but in the US, it's just in 4 states out of 50. And oof, it's taking a long time.
I'm not sure. I think my biggest worry is that the people who wear tinfoil hats in the country that I live in will suddenly try and stop that, because I think they're very much, I think we're a very anti-ID kind of country in a lot of ways.
Yes, that's culturally. It's historically.
It's really strange. I mean, don't get me wrong, I carry my ID with me all the time, and not to sound morbid, but a lot of the time that is in case my body washes up somewhere. But basically,
this is taking a turn.
My thought process is that if I could have a digital ID, I probably would. The options for me to do so are probably going to be very limited here in the UK anyway. So
in a long time, yeah.
I imagine it'll be a long time before that happens. But at the same time, I've reached a point where I know it's very different in the US, but I don't get ID'd anymore, which is very disappointing and really sad.
That's the use case I'm thinking a bit of. So if you have a physical ID right now, you show it to at the bar, and it shows your address, for example. I don't want the bar person to see my address when I'm showing them my ID, just verify my age.
That's a really good idea.
Digital IDs is that when you tap it to, they have a reader, like a payment reader or something.
Mm-hmm.
You tap it, and then the only information that gets sent is that you're over, that you can legally drink. I'm not sure it even provides you the exact date. So it's just moving to this. I think that's just better for security, for privacy.
Well, yeah, 100%. I think I've seen something similar with people's actual ID. So I've had someone, when I was in my 20s, scan my actual driving license, and it would put it on a big screen to the security staff, and it would say age 23 or age whatever it happens to be. So I've actually experienced that before, but with my physical ID card, I gave them it. They put it on like a scanner, and the software would just pull the date and work it out. So. Mm-hmm. I'm guessing you want a digital form of that, which would be kind of cool. I'm guessing the system would have to account for varying date formats, because I know that you guys in the US have different date formats. So like, this is a heart to heart now. This is showing how nerdy I am. I went to WrestleMania 25. So anyone who can remember 15 years ago, I went to WrestleMania 25 in Houston, and I just turned, I'm giving my age away as well now. I just turned 21 in the January, and it's in April every year. Yeah. I went to the bar. My birthday's in January, so my UK date format made me seem younger than 21. I got turned away from a bar until I could actually tell the guy, no, it's a UK format. And then he was like, he didn't understand. So I'm guessing the software would have to account for that, right? Because otherwise, young people like me back then would have been kicked out of the bar or kicked out of the whatever the kind of the location is, because the date format wasn't interpreted correctly.
It's hard enough. Like, again, for the 50 states, we can't even dive into the international stuff yet. We cannot. But anyways, you were bringing up using Apple Wallet more, and how often do you use passes, for example?
Not as much as I probably should. The last time I used it was on a flight. So is that technically part of the passes aspect? Or
yes,
is that its own separate thing? The thing is, this all stems from a few years ago. I went to an Oppo launch in Switzerland. I took I think it will have been Pixel 3 XL. This is how long ago it was. And I used the Google Wallet passes feature for my flight boarding card, and it failed on every single scanner. And ever since then, I've been paranoid about using them. And I finally decided, when I went to Dublin a couple of months ago, and I said,
"Try it again."
I'm going to try it again, and it worked, but I still was not.
Well, that's
confident.
The thing with digital IDs, isn't it? I still know so many people, like people our age, that don't trust their phones they use their credit cards all the time. Mm. It's either they had something go wrong in the past, like you, or it's just never appealed to them. But it's interesting, this turn away. Like, it only needs to fail once, like you said, to put you off it for however long.
Mm.
And especially like back then, the things weren't reliable enough, or it's only getting better now in the past few years. No, I totally see the point. It's the thing, like, from Google Pay to Google Wallet, that this transition a few years for Google, it gave them a chance to reset people's expectations, at least for the more technology inclined ones. But for, I don't know, regular people, the first impression matters so much. And hopefully, now things are at a solid enough place right now for Google to do a real push. Let's say, like car keys, for example, or like getting into your office building, or even a part, or how your home. It's a lot can be consolidated to your phone, but it just takes one bad experience for people to be turned off from it.
Yeah, I think with my car, I have. It is technically a digital key, but it's through the Polestar application. So
yeah,
if I'm being completely honest with you, as much as I like my car, there is so many things that go wrong with it as a result of software. Like, the software sometimes is amazing, lightning fast. It unlocks me. It lets me use my phone to drive with. I don't have to carry my keys. The problem there is that sometimes if I'm in a spotty network connection, because obviously the car has its own data network, and I think it has a radius for Bluetooth connection to my phone. If that fails and I don't have a physical key, I can't get in my car. And I've had that. Luckily, I've only had it at home where I've jumped into the car, tried to use a digital key, and it doesn't work. And that is the most frustrating thing in the world. And this is such a first world problem, having to get out of my car, go back into my house, grab a key, and then drive home, drive wherever I need to drive to. So, like you said, the first time it goes wrong, it puts that in, that doubt in the back of your mind. So, and that's with Pixel, that's with, I've tried it with my iPhone 15, I've tried it with other devices as well. And I don't know if it's the car, I don't know if it's Bluetooth on my phone, I don't, but it could be battery optimization settings. But having a having an NFC digital key for my car, I'm not yet. I like to think I'm technically inclined, and I'm not there yet. So maybe I'm showing boomer inclinations there. But I just think there's so many things that can potentially go wrong when it's like secure things, physical secure things.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Maybe we're a good 2 or 3, 4, 5 years away from that actually being viable, but
yeah, and we're a more tech savvy audience, I would say. But the general population is going to be even longer. Like, something simple, I quote unquote, is hotels. More and more places are offering the ability to put it on your phone through the app, unfortunately. A hotel app, and never works.
Yeah, I had that issue at the MGM, one of the MGM casinos at CES last year, and I probably told you about it. But I just remember going to the room, trying to scan my phone, and it was just like, you're not letting you in. And then I was like, oh, maybe it's because I've done this, and I was blaming it on myself. And I'm like, no, it's a crappy app, and the crappy door lock, and the crappy MGM staff not. Basically telling me that, oh, you have to do this and you have to do that. I was so frustrated, especially after like a 12-hour flight. So yeah, with the hotel room, give me a physical key. Give me the biggest physical key you can get, and I want to put it in the lock and turn it around like a B&B or even like a 17th century church key. Give me something huge that I can't lose and that goes in the lock, and I don't have to worry. And I hear that click. Brilliant. NFC cards or like the tapping on the door, the amount of times you put them in your wallet or the back of your phone and it wipes and you have to go get a new card. Oh my God.
Yeah.
It's just bringing back trauma, Abner. You've done this to me.
Well, to not build upon that, let's talk about the final topic for today. And this is more of a teaser, actually. So, as we are recording this, Google announced that it is merging the Pixel and Android teams into one division called Platforms and Devices. So previously, there was Devices and Services, which is all Pixel, Fitbit, Nest, etc. The Services part was added when Stadia existed, just before the Stadia announcement.
He's putting more pain on me today.
It became Devices and Services officially. Now, I believe that's a reference to Google One, something like that. Oh, they have a reason not to drop it, but I'm pretty sure it's Google One. Anyways, that's led by Rick Ostrow, and he is now taking over the Platforms and Ecosystems Division, formerly led by Rick Ostrow. This includes Android, Chrome, Chrome OS, Google Photos even. It's a whole big reorganization, and it just broke on Thursday morning. So we'll have more to talk about it next week, but just a tease.
Yeah, that is a big topic to delve into. So yeah, we're hopefully going to see how the dices land and how everything falls. But yeah, if you want to listen to that, stay tuned for the next episode of Pixelated. And I want to say thanks, Abner, for mentioning Stadia there and breaking my heart right at the end of the podcast. And yeah, if you want to listen to that, subscribe to us on YouTube, subscribe to us any podcast platform of your choosing. And that's bye from me, and I think bye from Abner.
Bye.
And we'll speak to you soon.